Can I break in and say hello? Great to have you with us. So great to have you with us here at Euston Church. My name's Kev Murdoch. I'm the vicar of the church. And we're thrilled that you've joined us for this evening. This evening's part of a series of talks this week, looking at that question on the screen there. What good is God? Last night we thought about what good is God in a world full of injustice. And tonight we're thinking about what good is God in the depths of grief. And we're really grateful that Sam and Fran Ridgway, who are part of the church family here, have agreed to speak to us about their experience of losing their daughter Libby last year. They knew from early on that Libby wasn't expected to live very long, and she died on the day that she was born. I'll get Sam and Fran up in a couple of minutes to interview them. But first, I want to draw your attention to this QR code that's going to come up on the screen. I'd love you to, you might want to screenshot that now onto your phone and go to that website where you can put in any questions that you have as we go through the evening. You may have questions for Sam and Fran coming out of the interview. They're very happy for you to ask them anything about things that they've raised. You may have things that you want to ask about the short talk that there'll be. So I'll interview Sam and Fran till about 8 o'clock. Then I'll give a short talk from John's Gospel for a few minutes. And then we'll get Sam and Fran back up, and all three of us will be happy to field any questions that you've put in through that whole time. Good. Well, let's make a start there. And this is Sam and Fran. I know that they're known to many of us, but let's welcome them. If you're a regular at Euston Church, you're used to seeing Sam and Fran up at the front because they're both on the staff team. They're both part of our workers and families team at Euston Church. Guys, thank you very much for doing this. It's just exactly a year almost since Libby was born and died. So all of this obviously still really quite raw, so thank you very much for being willing to speak to us in this way. You tell us how you became Christians first, Sam. How did you become a Christian?
So I grew up in a Christian family. My parents are Christians, and they taught me about Jesus for my whole life, basically. And so I can't remember a time when I didn't believe in God. And the thing for me, I was very aware that I just wasn't always very nice. And I could see that. And I thought, actually, if there is a God, then he can definitely see that as well. Mm-hmm. And so I struggled with that quite a lot when I was little. Mm-hmm. I think my parents were sometimes kind of quite unnerved by it. I don't know. Maybe don't. It's hard to talk about to children about sin. And like the things that we do wrong, a broken relationship with God. But I definitely felt like I knew that was true already as a kid. Yeah. And the thing I needed help to believe was that, God still wanted to know me and for me to know him. And, that what Jesus had done on the cross and his offer of forgiveness, that was still open to me, even though I knew I didn't deserve it. And so that was just really good news. And once I realized that, there was no reason for me not to believe.
Yeah. Fantastic. What about you, Fran? How did you come to faith in Jesus?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up, my mum is a Christian, my dad isn't. So I sort of grew up in a semi-Christian home, I suppose, and I went to church. And I heard the gospel sort of growing up, and I kind of believed that there was a God. I was definitely open to it. But actually, as I grew into my teenage years, perhaps classic teenager, I went into full-on sort of rebellion mode and definitely didn't like the idea that there would be a God who would tell me what to do, and that Jesus was supposed to be king over my life. So that was something that I really rejected and struggled with. And I went off to university, and it was actually during my time at university where sort of just through my experience of those years, God really showed me some of the things that I was chasing in life was quite empty. And it kind of led me to a place where I wanted to, as an adult, kind of look again at faith. And actually, I was sort of open to looking at all faiths, to be honest. And I thought, well, I may as well start with Christianity because that's what I know a little bit about rather than sort of going elsewhere. And so I started to try and read the Bible as an adult. And actually, it was through that re-engaging with the Bible and what God has to say, especially reading a book in the Bible called Galatians, God very kindly sort of opened my eyes to see that that was true, that Jesus really did die for me, and actually that he was really good and his ways were good, and it was a really good thing that he would be in charge of my life rather than myself, because to be honest, wasn't doing a very good job at it. So it was in my final year at uni that I kind of really gave my life to Jesus, I suppose, and yeah, made him king over my life.
Yeah, great. So fast forward, you're both at Euston Church. You met here, fell in love at Euston Church.
Love at first sight. Actually, it wasn't.
No, you were leading a small group together, weren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, be careful who you lead a group with, hey.
I remember.
I'm going to tell
this story anyway. Well, when I found out, we led a Bible study small group together. And I found out that I was leading with Fran. And I was like, oh, that's really nice. Fran's great. And Fran found out that she was leading with me and was like, oh, no.
I had an excellent small group and I just didn't want to change it. That was why. Okay.
That's
and then
what
I left him a bit and he was delightful. And you know,
who was your other leader who's so good? No, don't tell us who he was. Some other bloke. Anyway, so you got married 6.5 years ago. I was trying to work it out. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Florence is 3 years old.
It's three, yeah. So we have a little 3-year-old.
What's
who's
she
hopefully
into?
Sleeping right now.
Well, that's good. What's Florence
three
into?
Going on 13, I think. She's a three major for sure.
Yeah.
She's just recently actually really got into Frozen, which most of you probably know. Sam now goes around the house singing all the Frozen songs, which
there's
is a complete
so many,
nightmare.
There's like loads of extra Frozens now. There's like Frozen, the short Christmas special. And there was a song from that literally I could not get out of my head.
Oh, well, okay. Well, anyway, we'll move on from that.
Break into song.
Guys, your first pregnancy was a miscarriage, wasn't it? And then you had Florence, who's three now. So we're now rewinding about 18 months back from now. You're pregnant again. You've gone for the 12-week scan, which is a routine scan. How are you kind of feeling as you head into that scan?
Yeah, I think nervous, actually. We've sort of reflected that for some people it seems like having children just happens really easily, and family is not complicated. And I think because of what happened with our first miscarriage, and then, to be honest, Florence's birth was not that easy. Mm. That was a long, slightly worrying time, and there's some health stuff after that as well. So, I don't know, having children no longer seemed like the straightforward, simple, uncomplicated thing that maybe we naively thought it was before. Mm. So I think we were a little bit nervous. And still, you know, didn't expect the news that we found out.
Are you okay to tell us a little bit about what happened when they told you the news?
So our scan was at Barnet Hospital, just like normal 12-week scan. And the person doing the scan said that they had bad news. And it looked like something with the baby's skull was missing and just not that it hadn't developed the way that it should have. And it was a little bit weird because they sort of couldn't tell us any more than that. And they just said, you know, now it gets moved on to the specialist team and we need to go for another scan at UCLH around the corner. And so
that was the next day.
Amazingly, we're really thankful. It was the next day rather than like waiting for a few days with just no more knowledge. But
still having to wait that day. What was that like? What was swirling around?
I mean, it was hard. Actually that the initial few minutes of the first scan were actually fine. So, I sort of had this wave of kind of relief. They said, oh, you know, there's the baby and there's the heartbeat.
The heartbeat. Everyone's waiting for the heartbeat.
And then, so then you're thinking, oh, okay, great, everything's fine. And then they said, oh, actually, there's a problem. And at that point, your heart sort of sinks.
So you went back the next day.
What
was wrong with the baby?
There was just some of her skull was missing and wouldn't develop now. And they gave us a diagnosis and basically said, with babies like Libby, the rest of their, you know, biology develops completely normally. So, you know, in every other way, she's completely healthy. She'll make it all the way to term, probably. But babies with this condition won't, they just can't survive outside the womb. Yeah. So I think we were probably looking at a maximum life expectancy of kind of days, maybe weeks.
Yeah. So you came away from that appointment and how do you even begin to start a process, news like that?
Yeah, after they gave us all of that kind of news, they took us into a room to cry, basically.
Yeah.
And they gave us our two options of whether we wanted to carry on with the pregnancy, keep the baby, or have an abortion and terminate.
Mm-hmm. Did you respond straight away?
Well, I was surprised actually how quickly they sort of asked the question almost.
Yeah.
And we did respond, pretty immediately, saying that we wanted to continue, which I think was a surprise to them. Because I think actually for lots of people, maybe either they say, I don't know, I need some time to think about it. Or they say, actually, yes, we would like to terminate. So actually the midwife who was with us in this side room when we said, actually, we'd like to continue with the pregnancy, had to sort of go and then check with the doctor just in case she had missed anything that she hadn't told us, because I think she was so surprised that we said we wanted to continue. So that was it was a very clear decision, and we were sort of united in that decision. But it wasn't an easy decision. Mm-hmm. And I just remember thinking, oh wow, this actually, the night before, we had to wait this 24 hours to go and get this diagnosis. And I remember sort of running through all the different possible scenarios that could be wrong with our daughter. And one of the things I remember thinking was, goodness, what happens if she's actually fine until term, but then her life isn't viable after that for very long? And for me, that felt like the worst case scenario. Actually, looking back and having had some time, I don't think it was the worst case scenario, but definitely at the time I thought, gosh, this is too big, this is too heavy, this is too sad.
Yeah.
And I just thought, oh my goodness, I can't do it.
Yeah. And where was God in all of this? On that day?
Yeah. We cried a lot and we prayed a lot. I think it was we were both really thankful that we'd had many years of learning about what God is like, sort of to prepare us for this, probably worst day of our lives. Mm. In the moment of suffering would have been a really awful, hard time to start to try and begin, like, asking some of those questions in panic, trying to find some answers. We already actually felt like God had, kindly shown us a lot about himself, so that even though we had no idea why this was happening to our family, at least we knew that God was still in control, that it hadn't happened by surprise or by accident, that he knew about it, that he still loved us. And that meant that it was quite easy to turn to him and ask him to help us through it, whatever that was going to look like.
Yeah, and I think on that, you know, sometimes when you're going through that moment of, there's a lot of shock and pain and suffering, all those things, and lots of different feelings. And actually, it can be really hard to, I found my concentration span was sort of a bit all over the place. So actually, it was really hard in those days to sit and read my Bible. But what I found was that because, as Sam said, I had been living as a Christian for a long time and had this friendship with God, I remembered different parts of his words and his promises to us. And so, you know, it's a very famous psalm, Psalm 23, but that wonderful promise that talks about, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I'll fear no evil.
Yeah, that's right.
And so that became very real.
Yeah.
And our experience was that actually God was there with us every step of the way.
Yeah.
And then you carried on with the pregnancy, and as you said, in some ways a normal pregnancy, and you're growing in the normal way. What were some of the challenges and highs and lows?
Yeah, it's really, I mean, it's such a weird mixture of emotions, because in some ways our grief started the day that we found out.
Yeah.
And then from then on, there's, you know, we just sort of have a day in the future, and we know that that's the end. So that's kind of hovering over the whole pregnancy.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, we took real joy in, so we had more scans than normal, and they kept, you know, I have to say we're very thankful for the medical staff and things. So they basically just kept offering us, would you like another scan? Would you like to see her again?
And we were like, actually turned some down because I was like, no, we've had too many. We can't keep going back.
But to see her like move around and wriggle and, you know, watch her suck her thumb, hold her little hands in front of her face so that you can't really see her, try and get her to like jiggle around and move. And, you know, all of that was kind of really precious time because we knew that we weren't going to get to do as much of that with her out of the womb. So it's sort of like, I don't know, really strange. And it is, there's no good way, like there's no not awkward way to talk, have conversations about your baby when you know that they're going to die.
Yeah. Well, and especially because you said, Fran, people would come up to you in the shops in the usual way and say, oh, you're pregnant. And I mean, that just must have been so hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think especially in shops, people feel like they can say stuff. I don't know, when you're going to the checkout, you always end up having a conversation.
Tesco's.
Yeah, Tesco's. And obviously, normally, you know, if you see a pregnant person, that's something to celebrate. And life is something to celebrate, isn't it? And so those conversations where people would just be very normal and be like, oh, you know, how many children have you got? And, oh, it's another girl. And, oh, wow, they're going to be so close in age. And isn't that so fun? And often I find myself going, goodness, I don't know you very well, so I don't think I really want to kind of share this massive thing. It might be a bit awkward. And I think in those times that was hard. But actually, I have to say that, again, as a Christian, knowing that God was with us, that he made Libby, that he knew her perfectly and he knew our situation perfectly, actually gave me a real sense of sort of a deep peace, and I felt very free from having to kind of explain everything to everybody, but also free from, I don't know, getting angry with people for saying the wrong thing or maybe feeling slightly bitter. I didn't have to feel that way because actually I could go and have a good cry with God, and he knew and he got it, and it was okay that other people didn't. That was okay.
Yeah, that's amazing. And little Florence, who was just two at this time, what were you saying to her?
Yeah, I think that was one of the things that we found we were very sad about. Because once you know that you're having another baby, then you start to plan out the rest of your life and think about the milestones and the things that she and like Libby and Florence would have done together. Yeah. And you see other families with their kids and you watch them playing together and you're like, oh, that's so nice. And just very aware that these things won't happen. And I don't think anyone feels very prepared to have kids anyway, but we definitely didn't feel prepared to also lose a child. And so we asked people for advice, and we spoke to other people, and some of the wisdom that we were given was around kind of siblings and what you say to them. And often parents feel very, you know, you're protective over your other child and you don't want to overwhelm them or scare them. Mm. And how do you, Florence was only two, how do you explain it in a way that she understands something? And we didn't want to hide it from her. So, you know, you could be tempted to be like, oh, we just won't tell her. And she just will never know. But actually, that I think that would be really weird and wrong. I think we were a bit nervous about it and didn't really know how it would go. And in the end, we told her that Mummy was having another baby, that she would be her little sister, but that she had a poorly head, and so we wouldn't be able to have her for very long. We wouldn't be able to bring her home. And then she would go to be with God in heaven, and he would take her and he would look after her for us. Mm-hmm. And kids are great because she accepted that and sort of repeated it back to us. When we were really struggling and like finding stuff hard, Florence would be the little voice of truth in our family, telling us simple, basic things that like reminded us of what, you know, God has promised and things. Yeah. So she's been great.
Would you mind saying something about what it was like the day when Libby was born and died?
I don't know.
No, it was a day that I guess we'd had 7 months to prepare for. So in some ways it was a day that you go into feeling I guess we were really ready to meet her, I guess, in some ways. And we felt very loved and cared for, both by our physical family, our church family. We were very supported. We didn't feel, you know, on our own. I think one of the biggest things about sort of suffering and death, particularly because we were preparing for her birth and death at the same time, there's so much in that is just unknown. So we didn't know how long we were going to have her for. We didn't know actually whether she'd even be born alive and whether she'd survive the process. Mm-hmm. So that was, in lots of ways, felt very scary. And those were the really, really big things that I found myself having to really trust God with. Those sorts of things where, you know, as a parent, as any person, we want to try and control as much of the situation as possible. And all of this just was so outside of our control. That you just had to keep throwing it onto the Lord and thinking, okay, you know exactly what's going to happen. You have numbered, maybe not her days, but her hours, her minutes, however long she has with us. And actually the day itself was very, very precious. She was born by C-section, and we got to give her lots of cuddles. The medical staff were amazing. And so we had her very quickly. And she lived. You might have to finish.
Yeah, we had her for 49 minutes, which is not very long for a person to live. Mm-hmm. And it was, I think, there's a sense in which when you know something is coming, you sort of you try and hold it off for as long as possible. Mm-hmm. Kind of weird, you know, with Libby, I don't think we could say that we didn't want that day to ever come, because we wanted to meet her. We wanted to hold her and see her face to face and talk to her and tell her that we loved her. So yeah, it was, and it, we got to have cuddles with her. Florence got to have cuddles with her. And our kind of wider family came to the hospital. Yeah. The hospital staff were very nice. And we kind of, that sort of began a week of a kind of very slow goodbye. Mm. So we were in the hospital for two nights, and then we went to a hospice. All of us, so with Florence, my mum, your mum came, and they looked after us for another 5 days. That was really important for us to say goodbye slowly.
And I think I have to say that one of the things that scared me the most, I think, as a parent, was that it's not, you know, it's one thing to suffer yourself. It's another thing to think that your children are suffering. And that feels like a really scary thing. And I really didn't want Libby to ever be alone. And I think before, you know, she was born and we didn't know how long we'd have her for, I remember saying to Sam, you know, what happens if... You know, maybe we have her for days or even, you know, weeks. And one night, you know, she's sleeping and we're not with her and she dies in her sleep. And that thought just really, really scared me so much. But what brought me deep, deep comfort, actually, was at the same time remembering that she would never be alone because God would always be with her, even if we weren't. You know, as Christians, we believe that Jesus died on the cross to give us forgiveness with God, to give us a new relationship with him, so that we would never, ever have to be alone from God. We'd never have to be separated from him. And so Libby never, ever was alienated from God. Jesus did that for her. And that just was huge comfort. And as she died, as she took her final breaths, you can't go with a person. But God can.
And then we had a Thanksgiving service here, and you guys made a lovely little video, which we thought we'd show.
Yeah.
Should we show that now?
Yeah. Okay.
The first time I felt Libby move was when she was 13 weeks old. And after that, she was pretty much non-stop kicking, wriggling, and punching her way throughout the pregnancy. She was so very different to Florence, who was a particularly chilled baby. Libby was so lively. Her little character seemed to shine through at every scan, sucking her thumb, waving her arms around, batting away the sonographer whenever the scan came near her and covering her face. One of our favourite memories was when I had to have a procedure about a month ago, and they had to put a tube in to remove some of the fluid that was around Libby. And the doctor said it'd be very easy, very quick, but it just wasn't working. And we knew they were trying to stay calm, but it was getting a bit awkward because nothing was happening until eventually he looked at the screen and realised Libby was causing interference. She'd grabbed hold of the tube in her little hand and didn't seem to want to let go. Her little personality was such a gift from God, and we cherished every kick. Florence, Libby and I had many lovely early morning cuddles at 6 a.m. "I can feel her, Mummy," Florence would say. "She's saying hello." And it really felt like that every day she wanted to make herself known. Fearfully and wonderfully made, she was so very beautiful. With lovely long legs and a podgy baby tummy and big dark inky eyes just like her sister. It is a privilege to be Libby's mummy, and she was an amazing gift from God. I think one of the deepest desires as a parent is for your child to be safe and loved and for them to flourish. And even though our hearts are breaking and we will miss her so very much, we know that she is the most safe she will ever be with the Lord Jesus in paradise. With him, she will flourish forever, and we look forward to the day where we will meet her again and she will be made whole and new. For now, we say goodbye to our dearest Libby, but we look forward to the day of no more goodbyes.
There's so much that we want to thank God for. We had 49 precious minutes with Libby. She spent basically her entire life in our arms and listening to Christian music. God gave us a very kind midwife, and we can't really think of anything that the hospital could have done better to look after us.
And then as a family, we all moved to a genuinely amazing hospice in North London. There can't be many places in the entire world, I think, where we would have been better provided for. And we also thank God for everyone in our church family, people in London and across the country and around the world who have loved us and prayed for us. So thank you, everybody. Libby only survived for 49 minutes after she was born, but we've had her for 9 months before that. And we always said it was just our job to look after her for as long as we had her. And then it was God's decision how long exactly that would be. And we really feel like part of her little witness is that a person isn't valuable because they're strong or because of what they're able to achieve or because of how long they live. She was fearfully and wonderfully made in the image of God. And he gave her to us just for a short time. And now he has taken her back. Blessed be the name of the Lord.
We probably all need a moment to process that. You know, we think God works through weakness, don't we? And that is just a very powerful testimony from a place of deep weakness. Thank you. Grief's a process. That was exactly a year ago. What have been some of the stages over the last year?
Yeah, grief is funny, isn't it? I mean, it comes and goes in waves. One day you're kind of fine. Another day you feel really down. And I think I sort of stupidly said when we got home without Libby, and I was a bit like, I just didn't know I could feel this sad. And we knew it was going to be sad, like that was not a surprise that we were sad, but just the extent to which I just, you know, that was sort of my only emotion overriding everything else, I think was, yeah, I'd never really felt that way before.
And people talk about the different stages of grief, don't they? So people sort of say that kind of you move from denial sort of through anger to kind of acceptance. I don't think that's been our experience, to be honest. It's been more like there is a deep sadness, and Libby's birth and death has changed life. So life feels more complicated now than it did before emotionally, I think, in the days after. As Sam said, when we came home, those were particularly hard days and dark days. And I actually was not afraid of the dark, but I didn't want to be in the dark because life felt very dark. And so I had to sleep with either a light on or the window blinds open so that there was some light coming in, you know. And again, the things that were comforting and the words that kept going through my head was Jesus saying, you know, I've overcome the darkness. I am the light of the world. And I'm thinking, yes, this is not the end. This is not the end of the story. This is not the end of the journey. Life for us has changed. But actually, your capacity still for joy and to be able to enjoy the good gifts that God has given us grows again. It is there, even though there is a deep sorrow. You're still able to, you know, carry on with life. It is a new normal. People describe it as, I suppose, with any sort of grief.
Libby's birthday was the other week. How was that?
Yeah, I think we were a bit nervous as to like what that would be like. We didn't even know what to call it. We didn't know whether to call it her birthday or like an anniversary. One of the things that I found hard was, this seems like such a small, tiny thing, but, you know, most people, when you look at their, they get a date of birth and a date of death, and there's, you know, there's 2 days, and Libby just has one, and it seems so odd. But Yeah, we just wanted to mark it somehow. We had a nice day kind of reminiscing. We, you know, cried more. Florence enjoyed looking at pictures. And now that she's just, you know, just that little bit older, she was fascinated, wanted to see her little sister.
And lots of people were very kind and remembered and sent things. And, you know, I think one of our testimonies of knowing God's love through the whole thing is that he's used lots of people to love us and to strengthen us in lots of practical ways. And to be part of a community that is so caring has been wonderful. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, to remember actually that those promises that Jesus talks about where he says, I do promise that one day that there is going to be no more suffering, and I do promise one day that I will wipe away every tear. And so I suppose on days where it does feel really hard and it does feel really sad, those promises are so much more real and so much more fresh. And I think in lots of ways, my trust and confidence has grown.
That's amazing.
Through it.
Yeah, there's a great verse where God is promising a new world when Jesus comes back. And in this world, there won't be any of the brokenness that we feel in this one. There won't be any suffering or sadness. But there's also a one verse that specifically says there will no more be in it an infant who only lives a couple of days.
Yeah.
And, you know, that verse now for us means we're like, yeah, we know. We know the pain of that precise suffering. And we look forward to a world where that won't be the case anymore.
Yeah. Sam, Fran, we're so grateful because it's still really early days for you to be talking about this so publicly. And thank you for that. Thank you for the way that all the way through this process you've kind of walked through it with us as your church family. And that's been, in a way, a real privilege for us. This is not the end of hearing from you. We're going to get you back up in a few minutes, and that'll be your chance to ask some questions. So why don't you guys take a seat for the moment? And if that QR code could come back up, let's just have a minute or two just to have a breather, and you might want to start to write in some questions.